Your muscles are tired afterwards, and your hair smells like smoke. Sometimes Simon's power seduces other magicians. They can feel it, and they want to be closer. But anyone who's actually been close to Simon is long past feeling seduced. Once, he went off while protecting Agatha and me from a clan of worsters. Like badgers, but worse. And Agatha twitched and ticked for a week. She told Simon she had the flu, so he wouldn't feel bad. Agatha's less tolerant of his power than I am. It might be because she has less of her own. It might be that their magic is incompatible. That can happen sometimes, even when two people are in love. There's an old story, a romantic tragedy about two lovers whose magic drove each other mad. I don't think Simon and Agatha are in love. But it isn't my job to tell them so. And also I've already tried. Anyway, Mum says that when the mage brought Simon back to Watford, it was like he was calling bluff on the whole world of mages. Here's that saviour you've been talking about for 1,000 years. Even the people who didn't believe it couldn't say so out loud, and nobody could deny Simon's power. They did try to keep him out of Watford. The mage had to make Simon his heir to get him into school and to have him entered into the Book of Magic. There are still a lot of people who don't accept Simon, even among the mage's allies. It takes more than magic to make a mage, is what Baz has always said. It sounds like classist nonsense, but in a way, it's true. Do unicorns have magic? The vampires have some. Dragons? Numpties, nerdwolves, they all have magic. But you're not a magician unless you can control magic, unless you can speak its language. And Simon? Well, Simon. He gets up now and walks over to the window, opening it wide and sitting on the ledge. His wand is in his way, so he pulls it out of his back pocket and tosses it on the bed. Number 4, I write in the air. The mage. So we know the mage's men are raiding, I say. And Simon, didn't you say they were unloading things back in the barns? We could sniff around back there. He ignores me, staring out the window. Agatha, I say, what else have you heard at home? I don't know, she says, frowning and fiddling with her skirt. Father's had lots of emergency coven meetings. Mother says they can't meet at our house anymore. She thinks our normal neighbours are getting suspicious. All right, I say. Maybe we should move on to questions now. What don't we know? I start a new column in the air, but Agatha stands up and starts walking out. I really need to study. I tried to stop her. Agatha, wait! You'll get caught if you leave by yourself. But she's already closing the door. Simon exhales loudly and runs his hands through his hair, making it stand up in curly bronze chunks. I'm going for a walk, he says, marching towards the door, leaving his wand on his bed. Part of me wishes he were following her, but I don't think he is. I sigh, then sit down on his bed and look at our meagre lists. Before I leave, I blow my words out the window with a huff and a puff. 24. Agatha. I don't know what I'm hoping for. That he'll see me standing by the wall, my hair whipping in the wind and my dress billowing out around me. And that, what? That it will mean something to him? That he'll see me up here waiting for him on the ramparts, and really see me for the first time. There's the answer, he'll think, and he'll unfasten my ribbons and tie them around his arm or his thigh. And Morgana, what would that even mean? Something. Something new. I know that Basil, I don't know, thinks about me. Or at least thought about me. That he used to watch me, especially when I was with Simon. I know that he hated what Simon and I have, and wanted it. That he'd do anything to get between us. Baz was always there, cutting in at every dance, teasing me away from Simon, then just teasing me, disappearing, sneaking away. I played along sometimes. Maybe I should be grateful that Baz never called my bluff. Maybe it wasn't a bluff. Maybe I would walk away with Baz. I followed him into the wood that day. I still don't know what I was thinking. I mean, I know who Baz is. I know what he is. I can't break up with Simon for a Tory vampire. My parents would disown me. And I don't even know what that would entail. Would I have to be evil? Slip poison into people's drink? Cast dark spells? Or would it just be sitting next to a different boy at a different table? Being beautiful on another side of the room? I'd be gold to his black, both of us pale as snow. Maybe I wouldn't have to be evil. But Baz wouldn't expect me to be good. Always so good. And maybe I'd live forever. I walk the ramparts at night in a white dress and a knee-length woven cloak. The weather's turning. I feel the roses in my cheeks. Maybe he'll see me up here before I see him. Maybe he'll want me. And I'll know what I want too.
25. Lucy.
I keep trying. I keep calling. I know this is your place.
26. Simon. At first, when I see her standing along the ramparts, I think she's a ghost, a visiting. She's pale and wearing a flowy white dress, and her white hair is unbound and flying around her head. But everybody else has come through the veil, wearing whatever it is they died in, not stereotypical ghost clothes. I don't recognize the white lady on the ramparts as Agatha until she startles and turns to me. She must have heard me summon my blade. I immediately stow it when I see that it's her. Oh, I say. Hey, I thought you were studying. I don't feel angry with her anymore, now that we're standing out in the cool air and I've had time to clear my head.
I was studying,
she says,
and then I felt like taking a walk.
Me too. I'm lying again. I swear I don't normally lie and keep secrets from my friends like this. It's just, I can't tell them I'm out here looking for Baz. I mean, I never want to talk to Agatha about Baz for obvious reasons, and Penelope just doesn't want to hear it. After our fifth year, Penny decided I wasn't allowed to talk about Baz unless he presents a clear and present danger.
You can't just whinge about him every time he gets on your nerves, Simon. That would mean non-stop whinging.
Why can't I? You complain about your roommate.
Not constantly.
Constantly enough.
How about this? You can talk to me about Baz when he presents a clear and present danger, and, beyond that, up to, but no more than 10% of our total conversation.
I'm not going to do maths every time I talk to you about Baz.
Then err on the side of not whinging about him constantly.
She still has no patience for it, even though I was completely right about Baz that year. He was up to something, even beyond his usual skulking around, being a vampire. That spring, Baz tried to steal my voice. That's the worst thing you can do to a magician. Maybe worse than murder. A magician can't do magic without words. Not usually. It happened out on the lawn. I'd spotted Baz sneaking over the drawbridge at dusk and went after him. I followed him as far as the main gate, and then he stopped and turned to me, all casual, with his hands in his pockets. Like he'd known I was behind him the whole time. I was just about to start something with him when Philippa ran up behind me calling,
"Hi, Simon,"
in her squeaky little voice. But as soon as she said my name, she couldn't stop. She squeaked monstrously, like a lifetime of words were being ripped from her. I know Baz did it. I know he did something. I saw it in his eyes when Philippa went mute. Philippa got sent away. The mage told me that she'd get her voice back, that it wasn't permanent, but she never came back to Watford. I wonder if Baz still feels guilty. I wonder if he ever did. Now he's gone too. When I notice Agatha again, she's trembling. I unbutton my grey duffel coat, sliding the horn buttons through the cord loops. Here, I say, sliding it off. No, she says, I'm fine. I hold it out to her anyway. No, it's okay. No, Simon, keep your coat. My arms drop. It doesn't seem right to put the coat back on, so I fold it over one arm. I don't know what else to say. This is already the most time that Agatha and I have been alone since the start of term. I haven't even kissed her since we've been back. I should probably kiss her. I reach out and take her hand, but I must move too quickly because she seems surprised. Her hand jerks open and something falls out. I kneel, picking it up before it blows away. It's a handkerchief. I know that it's Baz's handkerchief before I even see his initials embroidered in the corner next to the pitch coat of arms. Flames, the moon, three falcons. I know it's his because he's the only person I've ever met who carries old-fashioned handkerchiefs. He dropped one on my bed, sarcastically, when we were in first year, the first time he made me cry. Agatha tries to pull the linen from my hand, but I don't let it go. I snap it away from her. What is this? I ask, holding it up. We both know what it is. Are you waiting for him? Are you meeting him here? Is he coming? Her eyes are wide and glossy. No, of course not. How can you say of course not, when you're up here, obviously thinking about him, holding his handkerchief? She folds her arms. You don't know what I'm thinking about. You're right. I don't, Agatha. I really don't. Is this where you come every night, when you tell us you're studying?
Simon.
Answer me!
It comes out an order. It comes out drenched in magic, which shouldn't even be possible, because those aren't magic words. That isn't a spell. The spell for forcing honesty is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. But I've never used it. It's an advanced spell, and a restricted one. Still, I see the compulsion in Agatha's face. No, I say, pushing magic into my voice. You don't have to. Her face falls from compulsion to disgust. She backs away from me.
I didn't mean to do that, I say. Agatha, I didn't. But you...
I throw up my arms.
What are you doing here?
What if I am waiting for Baz?
She spits out. Like she knows it will shock me stupid. It does.
Why would you?
She turns to the stone wall.
I don't know, Simon.
Are you waiting for him?
The wind is in her hair, making it lash out behind her.
No,
she says.
Not waiting. I have no reason to believe he's coming.
But you want him to.
She shrugs. What's wrong with you, Agatha? I'm trying to control my temper now. He's a monster. An actual monster.
We're all monsters, she says.
She means that I am. I try to tamp down the anger coiling up my legs. Did you cheat on me?
With Baz?
Are you with him now?
No!
Do you want to be?
She sighs and leans forward on the rough stones.
I don't know.
Don't you want to say anything else to me? Like, I'm sorry? Don't you want to fix this?
She looks back at me, over her shoulder.
Fix what, Simon? Our relationship?
She turns to face me again.
What is our relationship? Is it just me being there when you need a date to the ball? and crying for joy every time you come back from the dead. Because I'll still do that for you. I can still do all that, even if we're not together.
Her perfect pink chin is thrust forward and quivering. Her arms are still crossed.
You're my girl, Agatha, I say.
No, Penelope's your girl.
You're my... Her arms fall.
What, Simon? What am I?
I knot my hands in my hair and gnash my teeth.
You're my future!
Agatha's face is contorted and wet with tears. Still lovely, though.
Am I supposed to want that?
She asks.
I want it.
You just want a happy ending.
Merlin, Agatha, don't you?
No, I don't. I want to be someone's right now, Simon, not their happily ever after. I don't want to be the prize at the end. The thing you get if you beat all the bosses.
You're twisting everything. You're making it ugly.
She shrugs again.
Maybe.
Agatha.
I hold my hand out to her, the one that isn't holding Baz's handkerchief.
We can fix this.
Probably, she says. But I don't want to.
I can't think of what more to say.
Agatha can't leave me. She can't leave me for him.
Oh, he'd love that. He'd love to have that over me.
Damn it all, he isn't even here to have that over me.
I love you, Agatha, I say, believing that might work. Those words are practically magic in themselves. I say them again. I love you. Agatha closes her eyes at the sight of me. She turns her face away.
I love you too, Simon. I think that's why I went along with this for so long.
You don't mean that, I say.
I do,
she says.
Please don't fight me.
You can't leave me for him.
She looks back at me one more time.
I'm not leaving you for Baz, Simon. He's gone. I just don't want to be with you anymore. I don't want to ride off into the sunset with you. That's not my happy anything.
I don't argue with her. I don't stay out on the ramparts. My cheeks are hot and itchy, and that's always a bad sign. I rush past Agatha to the stairs and run down them so quickly that I miss a few and keep leaping down to the next landing. And then I'm just sort of floating down the stairs, falling without actually falling. I've never done that before, and it's weird. I make a note to tell Penny, then a note not to tell her. But I run towards the cloisters anyway because I don't want to go back to my empty room, and the drawbridge is up, and I don't know where else to go. I stand under Penny's window and think about how I could just call her if the mage hadn't banned mobile phones at Watford 2 years ago. I still feel hot. I tried to shake some of the magic off and a few sparks catch on the dry leaves beneath me. I stamp them out. I wonder if Agatha is still up on the ramparts. I still can't believe she'd said what she said. For a moment, I wonder if she's been possessed. But her eyes weren't all black. Were her eyes all black? It was too dark to see. She can't leave me like this.
She can't leave me. We were settled. We were sorted. We were endgame.
If I get an endgame. You have to pretend that you get an endgame. You have to carry on like you will. Otherwise, you can't carry on at all. Agatha's parents like me. They might even love me. Her dad calls me son. Not like I think of you as my son, but like, how are you, son? Like, I'm a son. The sort of guy who could be someone's son. And her mother says I'm handsome. That's really all her mum ever says to me. Don't you look handsome, Simon? What would she say to Baz? Don't you look handsome, Basil? Please don't slaughter my family with your hideous fangs. Agatha's father, Dr. Wellbelove, hates the Pitches. He says they're cruel and elitist, that they tried to keep his grandfather out of Watford because of a lisp. Fucking hell, I can't. I can't. I lean back against a tree and put my hands on my thighs.
letting my head fall forward and my magic course through me. When I look down at my legs, it's like I've got no boundary. Like I'm blurred at the edges. I have to fix this with Agatha. I'll say whatever she wants me to say. I'll kill Baz so that he isn't an option. I'll tell her. I'll change her mind. How can she say there's no such thing as happy endings? That's all I've ever been working towards. The happy ending is when things are going to begin for me. I have to fix this.
All right there, Simon.
It's Reese. He's coming up along the path from the library in his wheelchair. I look up. All right. Hiya. I'm not all right. My face is flushed and I think I'm crying. Do my edges look blurred to him? He hurries past me. I let Reese get a head start, then follow him back to Mama's house. I should sleep this off. I'll make sure that I power down, that I'm not going to set my bed on fire. Then I'll sleep it off. And tomorrow, I'll fix it. 27. Simon. I'm not sleeping this time when I hear the noises. I'm just lying in my bed, thinking about Baz. What did he say to Agatha? What did he promise? Maybe he didn't have to say anything. Maybe he just had to be himself. Smarter than I am. Better looking. Wealthier. Fucking horsier. He could go to all her events and wear the right suit and the right shoes. He'd know which necktie went with which month of the year. If he weren't a vampire, Baz'd be bloody perfect. Bloody perfect. I roll over and press my face into my pillow. There's a creaking then, and a cold wind. I try to ignore it. I've been taken in by this feeling before. There's no one here, no one at the window, no one at the door. The cold creeps up under my bedclothes and I pull up the blankets rolling onto my back and see a woman standing at the end of my bed. I recognize her. It's the same person who was standing at the window that night. And I recognize her as a visitor now. I've seen enough of them. She's come from behind the veil.
You're not him,
she says to me. Her voice is cold, actually cold, like it starts in my bones and icily flushes up through my skin, and woeful. I want to summon my sword, but I don't. Who are you? I say.
I keep coming. This is his place. This is where I'm called, but there's only you here.
She's tall and wearing formal robes like a solicitor's or a professor's, and her dark hair is pulled up into a thick bun. Even though she's translucent, I can see that her robes are red, that her skin is dark olive, and her eyes are grey. I recognize her from her portrait outside the major's office. Natasha Pitch, Watford's last headmistress.
Where is he?
She asks.
Where is my son?
I don't know, I answer.
Did you hurt him?
No.
You can't lie to the dead.
I don't want to. She looks over at his empty bed and her sadness is so potent that in that moment I'd do anything to get him back for her. I'd do anything to bring him back.
The veil is closing. It will be 20 years before I can see my son again.
She turns back to me and pushes forward. She's starting to fade. They all fade. Penelope says they can't stay long, 2 minutes tops.
You'll have to do.
Do what? She's so cold, I can't stand having her this close to me. She reaches out and takes my shoulders, her hands like ice, her breath a painful chill on my face.
Tell my son, she says fiercely. Tell him that my killer walks. Nicodemus knows. Tell Basilton to find Nico and bring me peace. Do you understand?
Yes, I say. Find Nico.
Nicodemus. Tell him.
I will, I say. I'll tell him. Her face falls.
My son,
she says, cold tears gathering in her eyes. Give him this. She leans forward and presses a kiss into my temple. No one has ever kissed me there. No one has ever kissed me anywhere but on my mouth.
My son,
she says. And it sounds like a whisper. But I think it's a shout. I think she's just fading now. I lie in bed, trembling after she's gone. The room is so cold. I should build a fire, but I don't want to open my eyes. I must fall asleep because the cold wakes me again, a fresh wave of it, deep in the night. It hangs like a cloud of chill over my bed, then seeps into me, touching me, cradling me.
My son, my son,
I hear. There's no figure this time, just this everywhere cold, and the voice is higher and thinner, a wail on the wind.
My son, my son, my rosebud boy, I never would have left you. He told me we were stars.
I'll tell him, I say. I shout it. I'll tell him. I just want her to go away.
Simon, Simon, my rosebud boy.
I close my eyes and pull up my blankets, but the cold is on me. It's in me. I'll tell him. If Baz ever comes back, I will. 28. Simon. I can't wait to get out of my room in the morning. I run out the door with my tie hanging around my neck and my jumper thrown over my shoulder. I have no plans to come back. Ever. There's no room for me in there with all the ghosts. Let Baz's mum hang out with his empty bed. I'm tired of staring at it. I have to tell Penny what happened. She'll be disappointed that I didn't drill the ghost with questions. Sorry about your missing son, Mrs. Pitch, but since Baz isn't here, we may as well use this time to advance magical science. Penny's already got tea and toast at our table when I get there. I grab a plate of kippers with scrambled eggs. We need to talk, I say, dropping into a chair across from her. Good, she says. I thought you were going to make me beat it out of you. You know already? How do you know? Well, I know something happened. Agatha's sitting alone and she won't even look at me. Agatha? I look up. Agatha's sitting by herself on the other side of the dining hall, reading a book while she eats her cereal. So? Penny asks. Is this about me sleeping in your room? Because I can talk to her about that. No, I say. No. We broke up. Penny's about to take a bite of toast, but she pulls it back. You broke up? Why? I don't know. I think she's in love with Baz. That reminds me, I'm wearing the same trousers as yesterday. I reach into the pocket and feel his handkerchief. Oh, Penelope says. I guess I can see that. I mean, I push my face forward. You can see that? How can you see that? My girlfriend falling in love with my sworn enemy. My girlfriend, who's good, falling in love with my enemy, who's completely evil. Well, your relationship has had better years, Simon. You and Agatha both seemed like you were just going through the motions. And the motions include cheating on me with Baz. Did she cheat on you? I don't know. Penny sighs like she feels sorry for me. She's unbearably patronizing sometimes. Agatha's not really in love with Baz. She's just looking for something that sticks. It's romantic to be in love with a dead vampire.
Dead?
You know what I mean, Penny says. Missing. Seriously missing.
Was Baz dead? Wouldn't his mother know if he were? Wouldn't she have seen him behind the veil? Maybe death is a big place. It would have to be. Maybe she's been looking for Baz here because she hasn't seen him yet on the other side. I jab at my eggs a few times, then drop my fork.
In all of this, I've never seriously considered that Baz might be dead. Hiding, yes, plotting, maybe even kidnapped or hurting, but not dead. He promised to make my life miserable. When the doors to the dining hall fly open, it's almost like I'm making it happen, like I've summoned it. Cold air pours into the room. It's bright outside in the courtyard, and at first, all we can see is the outline of a person. This has happened so many times since school started that no one is scared now, not even the little ones. When the figure steps forward, I recognize him at once. Tall, black hair swept back from his forehead, lips curled up in a sneer. I know that face as well as my own. Baz. I stand up too quickly, knocking my chair over. Across the room, a mug falls to the floor and shatters. I glance over and see Agatha is standing too. Baz steps towards us. Baz.
Book 2. 29. Baz. It's unnecessarily grandiose to use an open sesame on the doors, but I do it anyway because I know everyone will be in the dining hall, and I may as well make an entrance. I wanted it this way. I wanted to be the only person who got to break the news that I'm back. Snow is the first to react, leaps to his feet, sends furniture flying. It's work not to roll my eyes. It's a bit of work not to stare at him. He's thin and drawn. Normally, he'd be back to clobbering weight by now. Dev and Neil, bless them, act like I've arrived 8 minutes late to breakfast instead of 8 weeks. Dev nudges Neil, and Neil gives me a bored once over, and then moves the teapot away from my spot, which they've left empty. Good men. I walk over to the serving table and make up a plate. I pretend I'm not ferociously hungry. I feel like I'll always be hungry now. Snow is still standing, his meddling sidekick yanking on his sleeve, trying to get him to sit down. He should listen to her. Wait, what's this? Where's Wellbelove in this pretty tableau? I scan the room without turning my head. There she is, sitting on the other side of the room. Trouble in paradise. Staring at me. They're all staring at me. But I can tell Wellbelove expects something extra from me. So I give it to her. A long, cool look. Let her make what she wants of that. She will anyway. I settle down at the table and Dev pours me a cup of tea. Baz, he says, smirking. Gentlemen, I say, what have I missed? 30. Baz. Snow stands again when I walk into our Greek classroom. I take my seat without looking his way. Enough, Snow. I'm not the queen. He doesn't reply. He must still be working up to a bluster. Snow blusters like no one else.
But I mean, it's just...
No wonder he can never spit out a spell. The Minotaur folds his arms and snorts when he sees me.
Mr. Pitch, he says, I see you've decided to join us.
I have, sir.
We'll have to discuss your plans to catch up.
Of course, sir. Though I think you'll find I'm still quite ahead of the class. My mother always insisted on summer work in Greek and Latin. It's good to mention my mother with the older teachers. They all still remember her. I can see their heads start to dip into a bow. The Minotaur worked on the grounds when my mother was headmistress. Creatures weren't allowed on staff then. I dare him to hold that against me. I dare them fucking all.
We shall see, he says, narrowing his cow eyes. I'm not lying. Greek won't be a problem for me. And I'll be fine in Latin, magic words, and elocution. Political science could be a bear, depending on how much they've covered. Same for history and astrology. I'm going to have to break my back to get to first again. And I can't imagine Coach Mac will let me back on the football team. They might all cut me some slack if I told them I'd been kidnapped. I'm never telling anyone I was kidnapped. Kidnapped, and by fucking numpties, no less. Numpties are like trolls, but even more hideous. They're big and stupid, and they're always cold. They go around wrapped in blankets and dressing gowns if they have them, and if they don't, they cover themselves in leaves and mud and old newspapers. They usually live under bridges because they like to live under bridges, and they're just smart enough to hit you over the head with a club and drag you back to their hovel if there's something in it for them. Aunt Fiona was appalled when she found me in the numpty den. She berated me all the way home and all the way back to Watford. She made me sit in the back seat of her MG, a 67 Glorious.
The front seat is for people who've never been kidnapped by bloody numpties. Jesus Christ, Baz!
Aunt Fiona likes to swear like a normal. She thinks she's punk. I could tell she was half disgusted with me, half relieved that I was still alive. I'd been stuck under that bridge for 6 weeks, in a coffin, and I don't even think the numpties were trying to torture me. I think they thought that was humane treatment for a vampire, so to speak. They even brought me blood. I decided not to think about where they got it. They did not bring food. Most people don't realize that vampires need both. Most people know fuck all about vampires. I know fuck all about vampires. It's not like I got an instruction pamphlet when I was bitten. The numpties kept me in the coffin for 6 weeks, and every day or so they threw in some blood in a 32-ounce plastic cup with a bendy straw. I can go without food longer than regular people, but I was pretty ruined by the time Fiona got there. Fortunately, my aunt is an utter badass. She laid waste to the numpties before she found my coffin. Then she bombarded me with healing magic.
Early to bed and early to rise, she kept whispering,
and get well soon. It reminded me of the day I was turned. Fiona and my father both hitting me with healing magic that mended the bite marks and bruises but didn't touch the changes already churning inside me. I was still weak when Fiona helped me out of the coffin.
All right,
she asked.
Hungry. Thirsty.
She kicked a dead numpty. They look like giant stones when they die. Great heaps of mud and grey matter.
Can you drink one of these?
I sneered. No. Numpty blood is swampy and brackish, definitely non-potable, which is probably why someone sent them after me.
I'll take you to McDonald's, she said.
Take me to school. Fiona bought me 3 Big Macs, and I swallowed the first one in 2 bites. It came right back up. She pulled the car over to let me heave at the side of the road.
You're a wreck, Basil. I'm taking you home.
It's September. Take me to school.
It's October. I'm taking you home to rest.
It's October. Take me to school, Fiona. Now. I wiped my mouth on my shirt. I was still in my tennis whites. The numpties had nabbed me outside the club. My clothes were stained in every way imaginable and newly vomited on. Fiona shook her head.
School doesn't matter now, boyo. We're in the middle of a war.
We're always in the middle of a war. Take me back to Watford. I'll be damned if Penelope Bunce finishes our last year at the top of the class.
Baz, everything is different now. You've been kidnapped and held for ransom.
I leaned on her car. Is that why the numpties didn't kill me? Because you paid the ransom?
Fuck no. Pitchies have never paid ransoms, and we're not starting now.
I'm their only living heir.
That's just what your father said. He wanted to pay up. I told him I knew my sister had scraped bottom when she married a Grimm, but I wasn't letting him have any more of our pride. No offence, Basil.
She handed me another Big Mac.
Try again, slower.
I took a bite.
Why'd they kidnap me?
I asked, through three layers of bun and two all-beef patties.
They said they wanted money. They wanted wands.
What would numpties want with wands?
They wouldn't. The question is who hired them, or who won them over. I don't know how you get a numpty to do your bidding. Maybe you just bring them hot water bottles. They kept calling us from your mobile until it died. Your dad thinks they took you and then tried to figure out later what to do with you, but it all smells like the mage to me. It's not enough that he's laid us low. He wants everything that's ever made us powerful.
You think the mage had me kidnapped? The headmaster of my school?
I think the mage is capable of anything, she said. Don't you?
I did think so. But Fiona blames everything on the mage, so it's hard to take her seriously, even after she's just murdered someone to save your life. Mostly, at the moment, I was thinking about lying down.
Oh,
Fiona said.
Here.
She fished my wand, polished ivory with a leather hilt, out of her giant handbag and stuck it in my shorts pocket. I pulled it out.
So, she said, obviously you are not going back to that school, right into that bastard's clutches.
I am so.
Basilton.
Full name, all three syllables. He's not going to bother me at school, I argued, not with everyone watching.
Baz, we have to get serious. He's attacked our family again, directly.
I am serious. I'm more valuable as a spy than a soldier anyway. That's what the families have always said.
That's what we said when you were a child. You're a man now.
I'm a student, I said. What do you think my mother would say if she knew you were pulling me out of school? Fiona huffed and shook her head. We were still standing at the side of the road. She opened the car door for me.
Get in, you manipulative cur.
Only if you take me back to Watford.
I'm taking you home first. Your father and Daphne want to see you.
And then to Watford. She pulled me towards the car.
Jesus, yes, if you still want to go.
Of course I still wanted to go to Watford. Once I'd seen my father. Once my stepmother had wept over me. Once I'd slept for 12 hours under a new barrage of healing spells. I stayed in bed for a fortnight. They all tried to talk me into staying longer. Even Vera, my old nanny, was brought in to apply some guilt. Vera's a normal. She rationalizes all our strangeness by pretending we're in the mafia. Father spells her innocent whenever it gets to be too much for her. But after 2 weeks, I got up out of bed, packed my bags, and went and sat in the front seat of Fiona's car. I'll steal it if I have to, I shouted up the drive. Or I'll steal a bus. There was no way I wasn't going back to school.
This is my last year. Last year in the tower. Last year on the pitch.
Last year to torment Snow before our antagonism turns into something more permanent and less entertaining. My last year at Watford. The last place I saw my mother. I was damn well going back. Aunt Fiona stomped out in her heavy black Doc Martens boots, clichéd, and opened my door.
Back seat, she said. Front seats for people who haven't been kidnapped by fucking numpties.
I can feel Snow staring at me all through Greek.
Actually feel it.
He's so worked up, his magic is leaking out all over the place. Sometimes when he gets like this, I'm tempted to pull him aside. Deep breaths now, Snow. Let it go, some of it, before you start another fire. Whatever it is you're worried about, this won't help. I never do, though, pull him aside, or talk him down. Instead, I just poke him until he goes off. That's what Snow does best. He doesn't plan or strike. He just goes off, and when he does, he takes down everything in his path. He's half a fucking numpty himself. The mage gives him mittens and blankets, and Snow goes off in whatever direction the mage points him. I've seen it. I've probably seen it more than anyone but Buns. The way Snow starts to blur and shimmer, like a jet engine, the way sparks pop and flare in his aura, the light reflects in his hair, and his pupils contract until his eyes are thick blue. He's usually holding his sword, so that's where the flame starts, whipping around his hands and wrists, licking up the blade. It makes him mental. His brain blinks out, I think, about the time he starts swinging. Eventually, the power pours off him in waves, flattening, blackening waves. It's more power than the rest of us ever have access to. More power than we can imagine. Spilling out of him like he's a cup left under a waterfall. I've seen it happen close up, standing right at his side. If Snow knows you're there, he shields you. I don't know how he does it, I don't even know why. It's just like him, really, to use what little control he has to protect other people. The Minotaur is droning now, conjugating verbs I've known since I was 11. I can feel Snow's eyes on the back of my head. I can smell his magic. Smoky, sticky, like green wood in a campfire. The people sitting around us are getting stupid and drunk from it. I watch Bunce try to shake it off. She's glaring at him. He's glaring at me. I turn my head just enough to let him see my lip curl. 31. Simon. I go back to our room as soon as class is over for the day, but Baz isn't there. His clothes are in the wardrobe, his bed is made, his bottles and tubes are back on the bathroom counter. I open the windows, even though it's freezing out. I've been overheating all day. Penelope practically had to hold me down at breakfast. I wanted to rush over to Baz and demand to know where he'd been. I think I just wanted to make sure it was really him. I mean, it's obviously him. Baz is back. Baz is alive. Or as alive as he gets. He looked awful today, even paler than usual. He's thinner than usual, too, and there's something off about the way he's moving. A drag, like he's got stones of different weights tied to each limb. I just want to run him down and knock him over and figure it all out. What's wrong with him? Where's he been? I wait in our room until dinner, but Baz doesn't come back. Then he ignores me in the dining hall. He ignores Agatha, too. She's staring at him as much as I am, but I don't think she's as worried that he might have come back to kill her. She's sitting alone at a table, and I can't decide whether that makes me sad or angry, whether Agatha herself makes me sad or angry, or even what I'm supposed to be feeling about her. I can't think right now. I was thinking we could study in the library tonight, Penny says at dinner, as if I'm not literally fuming. I'm going to have to talk to him sometime, I say. No, you aren't, she says. When do the two of you ever talk anyway? I'm going to have to face him. She leans over her cottage pie. That's what I'm worried about, Simon. You need to cool down first. I'm cool. Simon, you're never cool. That hurts, Penny. It shouldn't. It's one of the reasons I love you. I need to know where he's been. Well, he's not going to tell you. Maybe he'll tell me something without meaning to in the process of not telling me. What is he even up to? He looks like he's been in some American terror prison. Maybe he's sick. Curses. I never thought of that either. Every scenario I thought up had Baz hidden away, plotting somewhere. Maybe he was sick and plotting. No matter what the truth is, Penny says, it won't help to pick a fight with him. I won't. Simon, you do, every year, as soon as you see him. And I just think that maybe you shouldn't this time. Something's happening, something bigger than Baz.
The mage has practically disappeared, and Premal has been on some secret assignment for weeks. My mum says he's stopped returning any of her texts.
Is she worried about him?
Well, she's always worried about Premal.
Are you worried about him? Penny looks down.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Should we try to find him? She looks back up at me sternly.
Mum says no. Says we need to wait and pay attention. I think she and Dad are asking around covertly, and she doesn't want us drawing a lot of attention to them. Which is why you need to cool down. Just keep your eyes open. Observe. Don't knock over any furniture or kill anything.
You always say that, I sigh. But then when it's us or them, you want me to kill something.
I never want you to kill, Simon.
I never feel like I have a choice.
I know.
She smiles at me, sadly.
Don't kill Baz tonight.
I won't. But I'm probably going to have to kill him someday, and we both know it. Penelope lets me go back to my room after dinner, and she doesn't try to follow. She's stuck with Trixie and her girlfriend now that Baz is back in town.
Gay people have an unfair advantage,
she complains. Only when it comes to visiting their roommates, I say. She's decent enough not to argue. I'm nervous when I get to the top of the stairs. I still don't know what I'm going to say to him.
Nothing,
I hear Penny say in my head. Do your schoolwork, go to bed. As if it's ever that easy. Sharing a room with the person you hate most is like sharing a room with a siren. The kind on police cars, not the kind who try to entrap you when you cross the English Channel. You can't ignore that person, and you never get used to them. It never stops being painful. Baz and I have spent 7 years grimacing and growling at each other. Him grimacing, me growling. We both stay away from our room as much as we can when we know the other is there. And when we can't avoid each other, we do our best not to make eye contact. I don't talk to him. I don't talk in front of him. I never let him see anything that he might take back to his bitch Aunt Fiona. I try not to call women bitches, but Baz's Aunt Fiona once spelled my feet into the dirt. I know it was her. I heard her say, "Stand your ground." And twice I've caught her trying to sneak into the mage's office. "It's my sister's office," she said. "I just like to visit it sometimes." She might have been telling the truth, or she might have been trying to depose the mage. And that's the problem with all the pitches and their allies. It's impossible to tell when they're up to something and when they're just being people. There have been years when I thought maybe I could figure out their plan if I just paid enough attention to Baz. Fifth year. And years when I decided that living with him was painful enough that I couldn't keep tabs on him as well. Last year. In the early days, there wasn't any strategy or decision. Just the two of us scuffling in the halls and kicking the shit out of each other 2 or 3 times a year. I used to beg the mage for a new roommate, but that's not how it works. The Crucible cast Baz and me together on the very first day of school. All the first years are cast that way. The mage builds a fire in the courtyard. The upper years help, and the little ones stand in a circle around it. The mage sets the crucible, it's an actual crucible, maybe the oldest thing at Watford, in the middle of the fire and says the incantation. Then everyone waits for the iron inside to melt. It's the strangest feeling when the magic starts to work on you. I was worried that it wouldn't work on me, because I was an outsider. All the other kids started moving towards each other, and I still didn't feel anything. I thought about faking it, but I didn't want to get caught and booted out. And then I did feel the magic, like a hook in my stomach. I stumbled forward and looked around, and Baz was walking towards me, looking so cool. Like he was coming my way because he wanted to, not because there was a mystical magnet in his gut.
The magic doesn't stop until you and your roommate shake hands. I held my hand out to Baz immediately, but he just stood there for as long as he could stand it. I don't know how he resisted the pull. I felt like my intestines were going to burst out and wrap around him.
Snow, he said.
Yeah,
I said, waggling my hand.
Here.
The mage's heir. I nodded, but I didn't even know what that meant back then. The mage made me his heir so I'd have a place at Watford. That's also why I have his sword. It's a historic weapon. It used to be given to the mage's heir back when the title of mage was passed through families instead of appointed by the coven. The mage gave me a wand, too. Bone, with wooden handle. It was his father's. So I'd have my own magical instrument. You have to have magic in you and a way to get it out of you. That's the basic requirement for Watford and the basic requirement to be a magician. Every magician inherits some family artifact. Baz has a wand, like me. All the Pitches are wand workers. But Penny has a ring, and Gareth has a belt buckle. It's really inconvenient. He has to thrust his pelvis forward whenever he wants to cast a spell. He seems to think it's cheeky, but no one else does. Penelope thinks my hand-me-down wand is part of the reason my spell work is such shit. My wand isn't bound to me by blood. It doesn't know what to do with me. After 7 years in the world of mages, I still reach for my sword first. I know it'll come when I call. My wand comes, but then, half the time, it plays dead. The first time I asked the mage for a new roommate was a few months after Baz and I started living together. The mage wouldn't hear of it, though he knew who Baz was and knew better than I did that the Pitches are snakes and traitors.
Being matched with your roommate is a sacred tradition at Watford,
he said. His voice was gentle but firm.
The Crucible cast you together, Simon. You're to watch out for each other. To know each other as well as brothers.
Yeah, but sir... I was sitting in that giant leather chair up in his office, the one with the three horns attached to the top. The Crucible must have made a mistake. My roommate's a complete wanker. He might even be evil. Last week, someone spelled my laptop closed, and I know it was him. He was practically cackling.
The mage just sat on his desk, stroking his beard.
The Crucible cast you together, Simon. You're meant to watch out for him.
He kept giving me the same answer until I gave up asking. He even said no the time there was proof that Baz had tried to feed me to a chimera. Baz admitted it, then argued that the fact that he'd failed was punishment enough, and the mage agreed with him. Sometimes the mage doesn't make any sense to me. It was only in the last few years that I realized the mage makes me stay with Baz to keep Baz under his thumb, which means, I hope, I think, that the mage trusts me. He thinks I'm up for the job. I decided to take a shower and shave while Baz is still gone. I only nick myself twice, which is better than usual. When I get out, wearing flannel pajama bottoms and a towel around my neck, Baz is by his bed, unpacking his school bag. His head whips up, and his face is all twisted. He looks like I've already laid into him.
What are you doing?
He snarls through his teeth.
Taking a shower. What's your problem?
You,
he says, throwing his bag down.
Always you.
Hello, Baz. Welcome back. He looks away from me. Where's your necklace? His voice is low.
My what?
I can't see his whole face, but it looks like his jaw is working.
Your cross.
My hand flies to my throat, and then to the cuts on my chin.
My cross. I took it off weeks ago.
I hurry over to my bed and dig it out, but I don't put it on. Instead, I walk around Baz and stand in his space until he has to look at me. He does. His teeth are clenched, and his head is tipped back and to the side, like he's just waiting for me to make the first move. I hold the cross out with both hands. I want him to acknowledge what it is, what it means. Then I lift it up over my head and let it settle gently around my neck. My eyes are locked on Baz's, and he doesn't look away, though his nostrils flare. When the cross is around my neck again, his eyelids dip and he squares his shoulders. "Where have you been?" I ask. His eyes flick back up to mine. "None of your business." I feel my magic surge and try to shove it down. "You look like shit, you know." He looks even worse now that I can see him up close. There's a grey film over him, even over his eyes, which are always grey.
Baz's eyes are usually the kind of grey that happens when you mix dark blue and dark green together, deep water grey.
Today, they're the colour of wet pavement.
He huffs a laugh.
"Thank you, Snow. You're looking rough and weedy yourself." "I am, and it's his fault. How was I supposed to eat and sleep, knowing he was out there, plotting against me? And now he's here, and if he's not going to tell me anything useful, I might as well throttle him for putting me through it. Or I could do my homework. I'll just do my homework. I try. I sit at my desk, and Baz sits on his bed. And eventually he leaves without saying anything. And I know that he's going down to the catacombs to hunt rats, or to the wood to hunt squirrels. And I know that once he killed and drained a merwolf, but I don't know why. Its body washed up onto the edge of the moat. I hate the merwolves almost as much as Baz does. They're not intelligent, I don't think, but they're still evil. I go to bed after Baz leaves, but I don't go to sleep. He's only been back a day, and I already feel like I need to know where he's at every moment. It's fifth year all over again. When he finally does come back to our room, smelling like dust and decay, I close my eyes. That's when I remember about his mum.
32. Baz.
I almost went up to the Major's office tonight, just to get my Aunt Fiona off my back as soon as possible. She lectured me all the way to Watford. She thinks the Mage is going to make another move soon. She thinks he's looking for something specific. Apparently, he's been visiting, raiding, all the old family's homes for the last 2 months. Just rolls up in his Range Rover, 1981 Warwick Green, lovely, and drinks their tea while his merry men go through their libraries with finding spells.
"The Mage says one of us is working with the Humdrum," Fiona said. "That there's nothing to hide so long as we have nothing to hide."
She didn't have to tell me that there's plenty to hide at our place. We're not working with the Humdrum. Why would any magician work with the Humdrum? But our house is full of banned books and dark objects. Even some of our cookbooks are banned, though it's been centuries at least since the Pitches ate fairies. Can't even find fairies anymore. And it isn't because we ate them all. Fiona doesn't live with us. She has a flat in London and dates normals, journalists and drummers.
"I'm not a race traitor," she'll say. "I'd never marry one."
I think she dates them because they don't seem real. I think it's all because of my mother. Father says Fiona thought my mother hung the moon. To hear my father talk about her, my mother may have actually hung the moon. Or maybe it was hung for her pleasure. Fiona was apprenticing with a herbalist in Beijing when my mother died. She came home for the funeral and never went back. She stayed with my dad until he got remarried, then moved to London. Now my aunt lives on family money and magic, and lives to avenge her sister. It's a bad fit. Fiona is smart and powerful, but my mother was the chess player in the family. My mother was groomed for greatness, that's what everyone says. Fiona is vindictive, she's impatient, and sometimes she just wants to rage against the machine, even if she's not exactly sure where the machine is or how to properly rage at it. A grand plan for uncovering the Major's plot is to send me sneaking up to his office. She's obsessed with the Major's office. It was my mother's office, and I think Fiona thinks she can steal it back from him. Sneak into his office and do what? I ask her. Look around. What do you expect me to find?
Well, I don't know, do I? He must be leaving a trail somewhere. Check his computer.
He's never even there to use his computer, I said.
He probably keeps everything on his phone.
Then steal his phone. You steal his phone, I said. I've got homework. She said she'd be meeting soon with the old families, a consortium made up of everyone who got left behind in the Mages' Revolution. My father goes to these meetings too, but his heart's not in it. He'd rather talk about magical livestock and archival seed stock. The Grimms are farmers. My mother must have been sick in love to marry him. After my mother died, anyone who had the courage to stand up to the Major's military coup were quickly forced off the coven. No one from the old families has had a seat for the last decade, even though most of the Major's reforms are aimed at us. Banned books, banned phrases, rules about when we can meet and where, taxes to cover all the Major's initiatives, to pay for every fawn bastard and centaur cousin and every pathetic excuse for a magician in the realm to attend Watford. The world of mages never had taxes before. Taxes were for normals. We had standards instead. You can't blame the old families for striking back at the mage however we can. Anyway, I told Fiona that I'd do it, that I'd go up to the mage's office and look around, even if it was pointless.
Take something,
she said, gripping her steering wheel. I was in the back seat, so I could only see a slice of her face in the rearview mirror.
Take what?
She shrugged.
Doesn't matter. Take something.
I'm not a thief, I said.
It's not thieving. That office is hers. It's yours. Take something for me.
All right, I said. I almost always go along with Fiona in the end. The way she misses my mother keeps her alive for me. But tonight I'm too tired to do Fiona's bidding. And too jumpy. I can't shake the feeling that I'm being followed, that whoever it was who paid the numpties to take me will try again. By the time I'm done in the catacombs, it feels like I'm dragging my own corpse up the tower steps to our room. Snow's asleep when I come in. Normally I shower in the mornings and he showers at night. We've got the dance all worked out after so many years, moving around the room without touching or talking or looking at each other, or at least not looking at each other while the other is paying attention. But there are cobwebs in my hair tonight, and I was so thirsty that I got blood under my nails when I fed. That hasn't happened since I was 14, not since I was just getting the hang of this. I can usually drain a polo pony without staining my lips. I move around the room quietly.